Hi, this is Bob Kalfin. I'm a stage director, and I've been directing in the American Theater for almost 50 years, and I just directed a play off Broadway called Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh, and I'm very glad to talk to Dave about it on his program, Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and you know that this program devotes itself quite often to things in the arts, often musical, things in comedy, but also to theater, because I'm a big theater person, and pretty much every week we have the Inside Broadway segment of the show. But today we're going to go off Broadway, but at the same time talk to a real Broadway person. His name is Robert Kalfin, and he has been a director for, gosh, I would say 3 or 4 decades now. Probably his best known pieces include directing Yentl on Broadway, that original production. He was also the adapter and director of the 1979 show Strider, and he is still at it right now. As we speak, he is directing a new play for a new production company. The show is called The Color of Flesh. It's playing at the 45th Street Theater through the end of April, and the director, Robert Kalfin, is with us on the phone in the neighborhood. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Okay, we just opened, and I'm, coming up for air.
Okay. Is it one of those, how long did you have to rehearse?
Well, we rehearse about a month, but it's a showcase production, which means though these are professional actors and first-rate professional actors, they have obligations during the day, so we have to kind of work around their schedule and work a lot of evenings and weekends. I mean, my stage manager is a lawyer during the daytime. Two of my actors are working in industry in rather important positions, and they are professional actors first, and I guess they do, you know, they need to feed their theater habits, so and need to feed themselves as well. So, so this is not unusual in terms of the showcase. I have probably the best cast I ever had for this play. I've been involved with this play for a long time, and I love it, and I'm delighted with the results.
Why don't you tell the folks what the piece is about?
The name of the play is Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh, and what the play deals with, I say to some people, it's like doing Les Mis with three actors. It's basically based on rumor and fact. It's about Marie Antoinette and this young woman who met Marie Antoinette when they were both 19 years old, and this young woman became a world-famous portrait artist. Mm-hmm. And she kind of inveigled her way into the court because she wanted to paint the queen. And the two women kind of bonded, and they bonded for life in a certain sense that they the painter, whose name was Elisa Vigie Le Brun, painted almost every known portrait of Marie Antoinette up until her death. Mm-hmm. And women also in the play, and this is sort of based on rumors of the time, shared a lover. So that was the male role. So it's two women and one man. And basically what happens in these plays, we have Marie Antoinette, who really is kind of almost like an immature teenager when it starts, and this other young woman who's kind of climbing her way up socially, and this young man who is an aristocrat, but on the side of being a moderate and trying to reform the government before, you know, the guillotines come. It's a great love story in the sense that all these people, especially the painter and the young man, both really come to love Marie Antoinette, and the experience of who she is and helping her and getting to know her. They're willing to risk their lives for her by the end of it all, even with all of the intrigue of a three-way thing that happened along the way.
Wait, there's a three-way in the play now?
No, there isn't a three-way, but basically, the young man is the lover of both women.
And, now, have you seen the Sofia Coppola film?
Yes, I did.
How does the character differ in this?
Oh, quite. This is a very full-blown portrait, which breaks your heart, of a young woman who was really not prepared for what she got into, a creature that becomes rather noble in the end, and she brings out the best of the other two characters through their experience of knowing each other. She she sort of makes them be the best they can be, and their characters all evolve through the course of the play in terms of how she changes them and how they change her. It's really fascinating.
Now, speaking of going through things and changing, at what point in your career, because you've been doing this for quite a while, did you become a theatrical director?
I was a music major in high school. I went to the High School of Music and Art, which later became part of the Performing Arts High School. When I got into college, I got intrigued by the theater department. I started by writing music for plays and crept in the side door that way. Then by the time I finished my undergraduate work, I directed my first play and was totally committed to the theater. And then I went on to the Yale School of Drama to get my master's degree. So I've been doing it since I first started. I've been directing plays, I would say, since 1954.
Do you remember the first play that you did commercially? Or
the first play I did in New York was in 1959, which was a year or two after I graduated from Yale. And that was a production of a play called The Golem. And the reason I did The Golem, which was famous as a Yiddish classic and also as a film, was because it was Ban the Bomb time. And the central issue of that story had something to do with creating this superhuman force and unleashing it against your enemies. So it was very apropos. And we commissioned an English language version of that play, and that was my first play in New York.
Would it be unfair to say that maybe over the years you kind of, I won't say got typecast as a director, but you either gravitated towards or were pushed towards shows with Jewish themes?
I would rather say it's just part of my repertoire. For many years, people thought I was an African-American director because I produced a lot of plays by Black American writers. And one of my Broadway shows is a gospel musical about Mahalia Jackson. So I don't like being typecast. I do like doing everything. Yes, because I am of Jewish background and was exposed to Jewish culture, and I'm interested in that literature. I would occasionally get involved with productions which deal with that subject matter. But the whole range of theater interests me, and so it's just one part of what I do. You know, I get just as much pleasure from directing Shakespeare or directing Kleist or directing Brecht. In fact, that's the next thing I'm going to be doing is a Brecht play. So I'm very excited. Well, this is going to be with students. I've had the opportunity to direct a play in the huge, beautiful new Skirball Theater Center, Performing Arts Center for NYU, with their graduating students, and I'm kind of very excited about that.
Well, that's cool. And you had mentioned also that there were plays that you were producing. You might as well tell folks that you founded the Chelsea Theater Center. So how did that come about, and what's been happening to that? I don't think that still exists, does it?
No, what happened is that I started that theater in the late 60s. It became the resident theater company at BAM for 9 years, and then we built the Westside Theater on 43rd Street and started playing in both places, both at BAM and in New York City. And I ran that theater for 17 years. And what that theater was about was doing what nobody else was doing, basically. That was the mandate, what's not being done and what should we look into. So it was a very wide range of material, you know, and you know, one of the famous productions of that time was me inviting Hal Prince to take another look at Candide and creating a new musical, a new book for that musical, which had languished for many years. It was beloved in terms of its score and its recording, but there was the book didn't quite work by Lillian Hellman, and Hugh, and Hal probably finally agreed to do it, and we produced it at my theater, and then that transferred to Broadway. It was one of many such things. I kept the theater going as long as I could and got tired, frankly, of raising money, because no matter what accolades we received or what awards we received, Tony Awards, Obie Awards, you can name them, you still had to start every year all over again with a tin cup and saying, well, we'd like to do it some more. And so I decided to take a rest from fundraising, and I became artistic director of two other theaters after that, but basically I wasn't having to be as involved with the money raising part of it, you know. And so the theater, as I say, existed over 17 years, and then I the times had also changed because we rode the crest of a kind of funding wave that was happening with foundation support from Rockefeller Foundation, from Ford Foundation, from the National Endowment for the Arts, from the New York State Council on the Arts. And that money, as you know, has kind of dried up. So, you know, we were able to do it for a while the going was good.
And then I guess most people would say that, not to say that your heyday, but that your most, your strongest presence in New York theater was in the 70s. I mean, there was the Me Nobody Knows, then Candide, then Yentl, of course, and you were even nominated for a Drama Desk Award for Strider.
Yes.
But then was it a conscious decision to move away from Broadway in the 80s, 90s, and now the aughts?
No, the Broadway thing was never what we were about, because I felt that once that happened, the expectation of having to continue to do that thing, which would have commercial life, would start to constrict what we did. And the interesting thing, of course, is always if you do something that's really fresh and different and maybe risky, that's the thing that might end up having a commercial life. So I realized that there was a trap there. As soon as we did Candide, I said, we'd better do some obscure German play that everybody's going to walk out of. Otherwise, we're going to be, we're going to have to keep doing this. People are going to think we keep doing this. I mean, there were plenty more Broadway shows after Candide and after Yentl, but that wasn't what we were about. If they happened for the right reason, because they were of interest to audiences and they had something fresh to say and they were theatrically valid things which needed a wider audience, which was the best reason for it to happen. Hi, this is Bob Kalfin. I'm the director of a play called Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh, which is playing off-Broadway at the 45th Street Theater. And I'm very glad to be able to tell you about it on Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
What are your thoughts on where theater is at currently? I don't know if you saw that piece recently in Time Out New York about the 20 worst secrets of Broadway currently, and also it's about off-Broadway and off-off. What are your thoughts about how the whole theater community, commercial and non-commercial and regional, and how that has changed in the past, say, decade or two?
It has gotten much, much more difficult. And different in the sense that in the glorious days of the Broadway theater and the commercial theater, the producers were theater people. They're less and less so people who are of the theater. There are several, but even off-Broadway as well. So when people come from the corporate world, they're not exactly known for being risk-takers, let's say. Some may be, but it's a little tougher. I mean, you know, when a board member of a nonprofit theater says, well, why would you want to do that play if you don't think it's going to make any money, they're asking the wrong question.
Hmm.
And that goes back to the whole problem of theater and the entertainment industry being a bit confused in our culture, in the sense, you know, that it's...
Well, do you think theater should be subsidized?
Well, I think if it's going to be there for the purpose that it's supposed to be there, which is not about getting butts in seats, but about a kind of theatrical experience, a communal experience, which is special and insightful and maybe daring, I think that's the only way that can happen. As I say, the risk-taking, it's when you take the risk that the popular and exciting thing might happen. But if it's fear-ridden because of, you know, who's going to be interested in this, and you start dumbing down because you're afraid it's not going to sell, well, you're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? It begins to limit choices. The European tradition, at least it used to be, was one that the theater was considered the same as the opera or the concert hall or the ballet or the library. And so it wasn't about profit. It was about what theater provided. They didn't expect the opera company to make money or the ballet company. That's a difference in terms of our culture. The entertainment industry has different goals. Okay? That's the idea. Sometimes it's both. Sometimes it can straddle, but it's harder. It's harder.
But you've made a career. I mean, you haven't had to do another job besides directing since you went into it in the 1950s. I mean, you've been, I'm sure the career has been up and down like any actor, like anybody in the field. But have you been able to carve out a career just being able to direct and teach?
No, I've been able to hang by my fingernails. Okay, that's what I do, you know, and I've been lucky so far. It's never been luxurious. It's always been, well, as long as I can pay my rent and eat, that's enough for me. It's never been about anything else except about the ability to go to work, you know, and to do the work. So, yes, of course there are lean times, but you try and get through. That's it, you know.
We're talking with Robert Kalfin on Dave's Gone By. He's a noted director on and off Broadway, and he's currently directing Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh, at the 45th Street Theater in Manhattan. By the way, did you mention that April 22nd is a special day for you?
Well, I always feel I'm lucky when my birthday happens when I'm working, and so I hope it's a good sign.
Yeah.
That is my birthday, yes.
Oh, congratulations. How, may we ask, how old you are?
I will be 74.
Mit Mazel?
But I'm going on 11, basically.
You're like my dad. He adds up the numbers for the birthday, so when he's turned 63, he's actually 9.
Right. Well, I think I have to stay 9 or 11 to do the work that I do, you see. That's part of it. Otherwise, I couldn't do it.
But I assume you do not see yourself stopping or slowing down or anything like that.
I couldn't think why. It energizes me. It you know, I can't wait to go to work in the morning. I get up at 5 and 6 in the morning, and it's not time to go to rehearsal yet. That's the way it is.
That's great. Now, Now it doesn't have to be bad stories, but it can be good stories, but it can be both. But I'd love to know, since you've worked with so many people over the years, some of your thoughts and impressions on the folks that you've worked with. For example, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep was a miracle. What happened with that when I met her is that she had was just graduating from the Yale School of Drama. I was in the middle of I'd come back from directing something on television, and I found, and this play was in the play was in production at my theater. It was Happy End. And there was some problems with the play, and I ended up having to take over directing the play and to make some cast changes for the thing to work. And Meryl was suggested to me because she had done the role in school at the Yale School of Drama. And she came and I met her, and in 3 seconds I knew that this was something rather special. And working with her was totally pleasurable, a dream. I mean, you know, she acts the way other people sneeze. You know, it just happens, and it's there, and you don't need to talk about it very much. As soon as, you know, it's clear about what you're going for, it's there, and it seems effortless. And she was a pleasure. She always was, you know.
Any thoughts on the creation of Yentl? Did you actually do any collaboration with Isaac Bashevis Singer?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I not only worked with Singer, I worked even with Levick, believe it or not, briefly. Anyway.
Did you say Aaron Lebedev?
No, Levick, who wrote The Golem.
Oh, okay.
Briefly. He was in his 80s when I met him and got permission to make the English language version of it. Singer was another story. A young intern who was working at my theater brought me the short story and suggested he thought it would make a good play. And that young intern, by the way, is named Philip Himberg, and he's now the artistic director of the Sundance Theater Festival.
Oh,
anyway,
wow.
Philip gave me the short story, and I thought it would make a terrific piece. And I called a friend of mine who is a close woman friend from college and asked if she'd be interested in making the adaptation. We got together with Singer, who had himself tried to write his own screenplay, which is about 600 pages long, if I remember. And he gave us that and said, use what you want. And then she and I started improvising scenes, and we would each do versions of scenes for the play on our own and then come together. We'd even act out scenes together. And then we'd bring what we had back to Singer. And in some cases, we would invent things that needed to be invented dramatically, and Singer would approve. I remember one time he wrote, we hit a little snag about one problem, and he wrote out a scene in Yiddish on the back of a brown paper bag, and we had it translated, and then took the idea of it and developed it further. And he was very happy with what we did, he was very supportive of the production, and he was very happy with the work. He was not happy with Barbara Streisand's version.
Oh, you mean in the movie? In the
yeah, he said Yandel doesn't sing. What can I tell you?
Speaking of, let's just do one more before we have to wrap this up. Frank Langella is now on Broadway, appearing in Frost Nixon. You also worked with him. And I've heard interesting things about him. Did you? Was he fine? Did you have a problem? Was he? How was he?
No, you know, I got to tell you that I seem to have a reputation for working with people that other people say are difficult. And as soon as I find out what they're worried about and assure them that I'll take care of it, it seems to go away. You know, everybody brings baggage from some bad experience they had somewhere else. Basically, you know, Frank was a dream. We did the play first as a stage play. Frank really, when he heard that I was going to be doing The Prince of Homburg, he sought me out, and we had a few meetings, and absolutely, I was delighted that he wanted to do it. And then the great pleasure of that production was that we got to do it on location. We shot it on location on PBS Theater in America, you know, great performances, and we shot it not like shooting a stage play, but we did it with horses and full costume and castles, and as though it was a, you know, like doing a real movie, which we shot in 8 days. He was an absolute dream, and there was no problems at all. You know, we were so groggy most of us at the time because of the heavy schedule that, you know, but nobody had any energy to find anything very much. We just wanted to get it done.
Well, I think it's great that you have the energy that you still do now, right at your 74th birthday. Let's remind everybody that you are directing Marie Antoinette, The Color of Flesh, a play by Joel Gross. That's running at the 45th Street Theater through April 29th. It does sound real interesting, this love triangle involving Marie Antoinette, and then you're going to go off and do some Brecht plays. If you could just tell me, what is your one main idea or the most important thing that you like to get across as a director?
My love is the theater, and the difference between theater and film and television is... one, it's a blind date every night. Two, your audience is active and not a passive spectator. The audience has to co-create with you. You have a contract where you're going to believe in something together and believe that it's real for those 2 hours that it's on the stage. And I like theater to be theatrical in the sense as simple as possible, with the audience filling in and doing some of the work. And that's the most exciting thing to me. Strider was an extreme example of that, where the play was done with a pole and a rope and a chair, and the audience swore they saw things on the stage that were not there. And that is the art, and that is what I love to do. Even in this production, which I have right now, it is stylistically the kind of work I really like to do, where the audience really is doing a good part of the work unconsciously and being a co-creator. And that's exciting to me.
Bob Kalfin, it's been great having you in the neighborhood.
Thank you.